Welcome to the podcast. We're talking about Game of Thrones episode 1 on DVD. Then we're going to talk about the show in general and sort of a reiteration before the second season starts. So, Eric is a requisite expert. I just watched the first episode for the first time, but I saw the last half of it when it was on HBO originally, and Josh has just only seen the first episode.
Let's start with a fresh eyes. Josh, what was your impression? What do you think?
You know, I thought they put a lot of interesting moments in the episode to just really hook new audience members. Mm-hmm. Like, from the get-go, like, violence, sex, whatever you want, here you go. We're going to have a good time, be merry, be jolly, drink, festivities. There's this imminent danger that I'm assuming is going to set the whole premise of the show, since I already know the whole winter thing. I mean, people have been telling me that since I've heard of the show's existence. So that I get. Beyond that, for an episode that's supposed to just establish everything, it was really well done.
As a pilot, you mean?
As a pilot, yeah. I mean, you know, I expected it to end on a cliffhanger because you said it was kind of like a soap opera, and that's what they do. But
I think worse than a lot of the other episodes in terms of cliffhanger endings.
This was the biggest cliffhanger ending.
It wasn't even really so much a cliffhanger as it was just kind of like a real gimmicky ending.
Yeah, the kid.
Like it was a visual gimmick, even like the kid falls into the camera. And I guess the idea is supposed to be, holy shit, they just killed the kid to end the episode. But, you know.
Well, now that ruins episode 2 for me.
What?
I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Good. I certainly enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like I said, when I got into it, I got into, like, the fourth episode, missed the first few, so I had that, like, dang it, I missed the first few, I'm not going to know what's going on. Like, that always spurns me on to, like, want to more, like, get it quicker. Mm. And in a lot of ways, it makes me watch a show more actively. And I don't know if I really missed a hell of a lot in those first 3 episodes. I mean, sure, there's setup and stuff, but, like, having seen other episodes, I kind of feel like, okay, yeah, all of that. Because there's a lot of backstory in the show in general. Like, a lot of backstory, and they do end up reiterating a good portion of it. Like, I ended up getting the whole thing about the king and Stark's sister and all that. They went back to that a few times more. So, I don't know. I mean, I think the only thing that they didn't do terribly well was in the later episodes, is the whole thing with the sister of the other guy, the blonde sister, because she, you know, she's, like, really frightened and meek. And by like, the third or fourth episode, when she's married to that guy, she kind of turns around and she speaks the language and everything, yeah.
Oh, we're talking about Daenerys.
Yeah.
Let's not get spoilers for another minute or two.
Right.
Okay. Well, we were introduced to the main households, Targaryens, who were the kings before Stark.
And we're not given anything about that.
No, this is all just backstory.
Yeah. But we're not even given any backstories on that. Like, we're really, it's kind of a thin thing, like this guy seems creepy and kind of evil, but we don't know, like, is he a good guy or a bad guy?
Viserys, the blonde guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's not a very nice fellow.
Right, yeah. I mean,
that's the vibe I get. When you tell your sister, I'll let their horses fuck you if it means I can get what I want, that typically means you're not a good guy.
Yeah. Unless there's some kind of a little twist there.
Brother. Yeah, that, I already figured that he's not going to be a up-and-coming gentleman.
Well, we also met the Lannisters, and they're very dynamic and interesting.
Yeah.
Cersei and the little one, Tyrion. No, he's fantastic, Tyrion.
Yeah.
And then Jaime Lannister as well. And the Starks, they're the main sort of...
I get the Starks. I don't know what you said prior to that.
The Lannisters are all the blonde ones who are married to the king.
I see.
And the king is House Baratheon. And actually, this is an interesting thing. The king's sigil is a stag, and the Stark's sigil is the dire wolf.
Okay.
And at the very beginning, we had the dire wolf that they found. They had all the five
of
the
dire wolves.
Yeah, there's a stag that killed the dire wolf, and the dire wolf killed the stag. A bit of symbolism in there.
That's a little clever.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, other than that, I don't know, just looking at...
But the kid survives. The baby Starks all survived. Because all the little baby wolves survived.
Right, yeah.
It's a bit foreshadowing in the future.
So,
that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. I mean, the production value is a big deal with this.
Yeah.
They could have done like a. I could easily have seen like the popularity of something like 300, them pushing for something like a real hyper stylized green screen kind of like artificial environment.
That'd been the wrong way to go.
Of course it would have been. And instead they went to more of a traditional like Lord of the Rings, shoot it on real locations. I'm sure there's quite a bit of sets and stuff too, but
yeah.
But it looks like it's all real objects and stuff. It doesn't look
for the most part it is practical sets and then matte paintings behind it.
Right, yeah. And then that adds like a level of kind of like scope and awesomeness to it.
And the casting was spot on from the characters in the books. They got a fantastic cast assembled.
Yeah, you get a little...
It's a bit grittier and dirtier than you see in the books, because in the books your imagination takes over and you see things a little bit
right.
More clean.
It's always going to be some kind of a shift in terms of like now they've objectively painted the picture for you. Yeah, I don't know. I mean... It's a case of, if I was super busy, I don't know if I would go back to this. But it's one of those ones that, like, it gets better, I would say.
Mm.
So if you were at all enjoyed the pilot, it's worth giving it, I'd say, till the fourth episode. Because I think that's the first one I saw, was the fourth.
Mm.
And that's, I mean, when things start to sort of roll. And I like some of the things... I mean, they wouldn't have been good for very long, but I like some of the not so much twists, but plays on things. Like, there's a lot of things you can identify early on. Like, you can see the kind of bitchy prince kid, and like, oh, you're like, okay, they got the bitchy prince kid, and they got that.
Did he have a line? I don't think he had a line.
I don't think he said anything. No, he just looked and sneered.
He just sneered at everything.
Looked like a bitch, and it's like, oh.
Oh, there's something smelly in front of my nose the entire episode.
The stuff they get into, I mean, it's not really a spoiler, but... I mean, because they have some of it in the pilot, but just the relationship between Ned and the king, I think, is stuff I really liked. I like the kind of odd realism of the politics of the whole thing, where it's like, sure, they have these houses and stuff, but there's this reluctance and there's this sort of back and forth. And I mean, really, the show gets rolling once Ned gets to the King's Landing and once they do more with what's going on in the North. I mean, really, those are the two main hotbeds of activity in Winterfell. It's kind of an odd place for them to have set the majority of the action of the pilot.
In Winterfell, which we don't really go back to.
Yeah, you never really do. It's sort of supposed to be... Well, I mean, it's like the typical... Everything is fine. Everybody's good. Everybody's happy. The family's good. The guy's with his wife. Everybody's together, and they're good at the beginning. And then pretty quickly, like, everybody is off to different directions in that whole family and doing different things, and the characters are flowing... And there's some obvious sort of foreshadowing, not so much obvious foreshadowing so much as just like hints at where the characters are going to be going and stuff. But yeah. I'm going to take your leave.
Okay. You guys are ruining too much.
Well, we didn't really say anything. We didn't ruin anything.
It's basic things to you guys, but you're telling me.
I didn't say, what did I tell you?
That the family splits up and... They do their own thing and they do it.
Well, that's what characters would do in a storyline, though.
That's great, but you're...
Okay. You must really like it, then. You should check it out. It seems like a real basic...
Yeah, well, it's basic story structure, but still.
Yeah. Right. Okay, well, yeah, well, let's get into it, then. So, the thing that struck me the most about it as I was watching it was... At a certain point in time, it starts to almost feel, because it gets so ingrained with the politics, which I kind of liked with Ned being the king's hand and all the like subterfuge and all the different sort of gangs. It really felt a lot like The Sopranos.
I've heard that. It's a medieval version of The Sopranos. Well, I've never seen The Sopranos, right. So I don't know what that one's on.
Well, it was very much so like that, in that like HBO is going to... This is what they're going to focus on. Like, this could be this epic, awesome, fantasy thing, and they're making it about... You know, the drama, the politics, and which is interesting.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, oh, you're taking a very safe route for... You're staying very ungenre, you know? You're not exploring these other aspects as much as you could.
Well, I think that's what makes it good, because the trap that most fantasy films fall into is they don't have really interesting story and characters. They just have the genre that they play. And so these big battles and these quests that just don't... go anywhere or do anything you don't care about. Right. But these characters we're all really invested in right off the bat because they're so dynamic.
Yeah.
And all the stuff that's going on.
No, and that's what I'm saying is, like, it did that just enough. I was just about ready to be like, come on, something needs to happen. Something more needs to happen because it's too much like a soap opera or whatever. And then stuff did. And so, like the last three episodes of season one, shit was happening.
Right.
And once stuff happens with Ned and everything, you're like, okay, they're going to do this. They're going to, like, make decisions in the show to... And, like, you know, just so you know, now that Josh has left, full spoilers, and we're going to talk about the whole thing because Eric's read all the books, and I'm interested to sort of get into it all, just to see whether or not it's this kind of thing that I'm going to give my full investment in terms of the other seasons, or if it's something I can be like, okay, I get it, it sounds good, but, you know.
Well, it followed, the whole season followed the book.
It was the first book?
Pretty well, yeah.
Through and through. It wasn't like a Lord of the Rings thing where, like, it cut off 10 pages before
the end. No, it ends just about where the books end.
Okay, that was a great season ending too, and that was, I think, one of the most exciting things was because it had been so, I don't know what the term is, but so like grounded and for the most part kind of a realism fantasy, you know, where it's like, okay, there's not like these witches and people, you know, doing magic and you know, creatures all over the place. There's this idea of these White Walkers that just seem like maybe they're just barbarians from the north who know what the hell they are. And they get more objective about what that is later on in the first season, where it's like, oh, it almost seems like it's just straight up zombies or something.
Yeah.
Who knows? They don't really make it
fully. Does it come back again later on?
In the first season, yeah. There's one like in the chamber of the main guy, and that's what gets them all inspired to be like, okay, shit, we're gonna like mount up and go in there. And that's how the first season actually ends, doing that. I mean, it's a juxtaposition of that and then Khaleesi or whatever doing her thing. So yeah, I mean, just the way the decisions that they made about how to end that first season in terms of like what they had to kind of cop to was kind of like a Lost thing, where it's like Lost is this sci-fi show that didn't really try as long as it could not to cop to being a sci-fi show. Try to be like, okay, no, there's nothing, there's a couple kind of odd mysterious things going on, but then eventually it's like, okay, yeah, there's time traveling, there's
a smoke monster,
there's an actual smoke, we're saying that's happening in the show.
Yeah, but they
sci-fi, you know?
They open it with the supernatural, the dead rising,
right?
And so we get that feel that there is some supernatural
aspect, something creepy. Yeah, but they keep it sort of like it's supernatural, or it's some kind of weird tribal thing, you know, like a New Year's of the Dead kind of.
Yeah, they don't overdo it. They don't. They keep it just one thing.
Yeah, but then the ending comes in, and for the first season, the whole shebang, and says, okay, now we've just done something that's going to have to force everything else to change. And in typical who knows what television fashion, or maybe even in the books, maybe they'll avoid having to deal with that for as long as they can, and it will be like three episodes before she shows up like firebombing from the sky. But
are you talking I'm talking about the
way they just cop to the fact like, oh yeah, this is a fantasy,
and the dragons finally came back. It was the first time in like eons of dragons.
Right, exactly, and that's a big freaking deal for a show like that to be like, okay, yeah, we're going to do this. We're going to have this stuff in it. We're going to cop to being a fantasy show. That's, you know, we're not just going to have that setting, but basically be a safe, you know, you're not a nerd to like this because it's like that, but it's like this. You know, it's actually very serious and, you know, it's serious drama. It's like, no, it's serious drama. And it's got fucking dragons, you know? It's like, okay, you have to kind of admit that you're a bit of a nerd if you like it or whatever. And I like that. I like that they're gonna make that step. So I'm curious what they do with season two. I'm curious how the stories go. Like, I could start thinking about, start writing my own idea for seeing how the characters could interplay.
I'm just trying to remember how season two goes. How episode or
book two. How many? No, he hasn't finished it yet, right?
Correct. There were four books and he just released the fifth.
Okay.
And the fourth and fifth are actually, they're the same time frame, but they just follow different characters.
Oh, that's weird.
So
kind of like
books,
Lord of the Rings book one and two.
Yes. In the books, each chapter follows a character. It follows like Ned Stark or Catelyn, his wife, or Jon Snow or Bran, the kid who got tossed off the roof.
Right.
And then as these books progress, they introduce more characters, or even they start going on points of view of characters we've already established, like Jaime Lannister or even Cersei.
Right.
These folks were not our point of reference in the first book, but they do become points of reference later on in the other books.
Interesting. So he kind of changes the narrator or changes the main character?
The point of view.
Right.
Not the main
character,
so to speak. The focus
in
all the books.
Is it an omniscient thing, then? It's a, the way he's writing it, so it's not like one character saying I a bunch and stuff. It's it's a like third person.
Yes, it is third person, but you do go into the character's thoughts.
Okay, all right.
Of whoever is the character the chapter is about.
Okay.
Yeah, but all the books do kind of focus on the Stark family. They're kind of the center.
Yeah, they're the Ewings. Yeah. Make an old Dallas reference yeah. that no one will get.
As many as that survive.
Yeah.
And
they seem to be by and large they seem to be sort of the good family. Like they're mostly good people.
Yes.
It isn't like there's the evil brother in the group that you really identify, at least not in the first season, having seen the first season. It's they have different variances, but
there's sort of. There's Theon
the sort of middle Greyjoy. Contentious one.
Yeah, he's not one of their sons, but he's the ward of the Stark family.
Right.
And Theon Greyjoy was the son of a rebel. Another rebel family. Sort of like the Vikings would be, I suppose. Sort of that type of a clan. And he was basically taken as a hostage and raised in the Stark household.
Right, yeah, I remember him saying something about that in the first season.
Yeah, he's the fellow who puts the knife to the pup in the pilot.
Right. Interesting. So it does kind of try to do that whole thing where it's like it'll make you hate a character, but then it will give you their side of things, and then you'll kind of have maybe a little sympathy for their plight. And sort of like there are different levels of good and bad, but
yes.
You know the bad characters are still like you can get their point, their angle on it. They, you know, you get that the queen is upset because her husband basically cheats on her because he doesn't really love her because he is in love with.
Well, Jaime Lannister is a really dynamic character, and. We like him because he owns up to what he is.
Right, yeah.
Tyrion Lannister, everybody loves because he's super awesome.
Well, yeah.
And he's maybe the moral compass of the series.
In that sort of like a sardonic fashion of like, you know, he gets it all.
Exactly. Seriously, though, she has really no redeeming qualities.
Yeah, not a lot. She's got a lot of sense of entitlement, and then when she doesn't get what she wants, then she feels like that gives her
then she carte blanche kills she lots of people. And she has a terrible, terrible son.
Yeah, I mean that's the one thing that
her other two kids are all right, but they're not really players at all.
They're not in the first season at all, are they?
They show them. They don't introduce them.
They're like little kids, like.
Well, actually, all the kids were aged for the series. As opposed to the books. In the books, Bran is only 7 years old,
mm-hmm.
and that kid is clearly 10 or 11.
Yeah.
And the other young son, Rickon, who I think they might have shown, he looked like a 7 or 8 year old, but he's really 4 years old in the books. So they aged him all about 3 years.
Okay, yeah. Probably just because they needed it. Make them be teenagers in season 2 or something strange like that.
Well, it's easier to find better actors who are older right. than super young ones.
Now, how does that work with the books in terms of, and how do you think that's going to relate to the seasons? Do you think that are the books pretty evenly written such that they probably will do a season a book?
Yeah, I think so. All the books are kind of the same time frame. Unfortunately, the dudes kind of plot along in the whole arcing storyline wise because he jumps from so many different characters and all their different points of view. So
that is a Lost kind of thing, or a lot of other, I mean that makes it most perfect for a TV show
because
you can take your you can kind of, you know, just draw out the overarching.
Yes, there's only like one or two big events the entire book, but it took 500 pages to go through it because of he's jumping from all the different families and all the perspectives. And then we go on to the other side of the world with Daenerys and all of her adventures, which is completely unrelated until the fifth book to anything happening in
the They don't connect them until the fifth book?
Maybe that was a spoiler.
But no, that's what we're doing. That's what we're doing. I'm keen with that because I'm interested in from a storytelling standpoint. Like, I could see, to me, the two characters that were the most compelling by the end, and I don't know if this is a purposeful thing, or I guess we don't know what the end game is for the story, because is there a sixth book and that's it? Does he said that? Does he make
God, I hope so. I really hope he just finishes it, ends it, and we can all think, thank God, that was a great series. Whoopity-doo.
Right. Now, I mean, I know, you know, it seems like it establishes by the end of the first season that yes and no in terms of the like anybody can die at any time thing when they basically, you know, when they off Ned.
Yeah.
Once Ned's gone, you're kind of like, okay. Who do I give a shit about now?
Who's next?
In terms of like the main group. And then you know, they've done a good job to set up the Snow character, you know, being the bastard, being kind of shunned. And then that was a really compelling bit in that first season when he was like, I have to go back to help my family. Like, he had, like, a lot of rationale for it. And they were like, we will kill you. You know, you went into this. You're stuck here. And so I feel like, okay, that's going to be an interesting way that gets played out, because he at some point he's going to need to get involved in what's going on in the greater story if he's just stuck up there the whole time.
Well, that's also really interesting, because the Wall is its own story as well. That doesn't really tie into any of the whole Game of Thrones that's happening with all the family stuff. So there's the Seven Kingdoms. They're all fighting for the game, playing the Game of Thrones. Then there's the Wall, which is its own story. Then there's whatever Daenerys is doing in the...
on the island somewhere.
The other worlds.
Yeah. Well, but yeah. So by the end of the first season, I was like, okay, I'm interested. I'm interested in what the little guy's up to, what Tyrion's up to, in terms of how he's going to affect the main, you know, the kingdom. And I'm interested in what's going to happen up in the north with Snow. And then, of course, I'm interested in the Dragon Lady.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, how quickly is she...
Those are kind of the three focus points of the show, because all those folks are very dynamic and they all are very redeeming.
They also like have like the most depth of character, because they were all put upon on some level, you know, her by her brother, and then sort of having to go through major change, which happens just in the course of the first season.
And
the same for the other two. So I mean, that just makes them the more interesting characters, I think. I just don't know. Like you said, it sounds like they take their goddamn sweet time with things in the books.
Yes.
So, I mean, is it conceivable that season two will have no dragons in it just because she's doing whatever she's doing? She's not going to show up and start attacking the kingdom.
Well, the dragons take forever to grow.
Oh,
right now, they're the size of cats.
I wasn't sure about that. I saw them and I'm like, oh, is this going to be a thing where they're like full on by the opening of the second season, or are they going to milk the hell out of that?
No, I'm pretty sure second season starts as soon as the first season left off.
Okay.
At least that's how it was in books.
The books, yeah.
There was between book, I think 3 and 4, there might have been a year. There was just
stuff being slowly positioned, kind of.
Yeah.
Interesting. And then between 4 and 5, was it boom, boom?
Well, 4 and 5 were the same timeline.
Oh, right, that's right, you said that.
But different characters.
Different character focus. That's curious. Do any of the sort of... I mean, I guess there's progress for the characters and stuff. So more people are going to die as the books move on. And the stuff with the North... Does the stuff with the North, has that, like, been wrapped up in any way? Are any of those three... Like, we talked about those three characters and their kind of seemingly separate journeys that invariably you assume will all be related to one thing. I mean, like you said, the North seems to kind of be such its own thing in terms of, like, well, no matter what happens in the kingdom, they need to do that because it's an overwhelming force that presumably, you know, whatever this mysterious force is could destroy all of them. So it's like it would band all of the kingdoms together by necessity, you know?
That's the idea, but nobody takes the North seriously.
Exactly.
The Wall is kind of a joke.
Yeah, because it's like it's been millenniums.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And
but they've already elevated that even in the first season of the show. They've made a point of like, okay, stuff's going to happen. People are starting to know this is like this is something to be worried about.
And but even in the fifth book, those three characters don't converge.
They still haven't converged by the fifth.
Huh? They get really close though.
So then that must be the whole head that they're leading to. Is that once they are converged?
I hope so.
I mean, because it just seems like
that is if they survive into the sixth book.
It seems like a natural conclusion for the story to have something to do with those three characters arriving at some kind of a tacit agreement. I mean, if you want it to be any kind of a like reasonable bit of closure, who's to say it's obligated to have that? But on some level, if you do that big an epic of a story, you want it to kind of feel like it's an age. You know, like Lord of the Rings kind of ended, what was it, the third age
or
something, you know, like because it was such a big deal and this main evil force ended and, you know, things were reset. Everybody wasn't happy, wasn't perfect, happily ever after thing, but it was a satisfying conclusion.
And I hope that's what he'll do in the
sixth which book. I think would require those characters to come together. And
that is if they survive, because not all of them was assured survival into the sixth book.
Oh wow!
I don't know.
Have you read the sixth book or the fifth book?
Fifth book, I have. but I don't want to give away who gets stabbed multiple times. We don't know if he survives into the he or she survives into that next one.
Right. So far, I mean, it seems to me like the thing is that you're getting. Everybody loves these books. I mean, all kinds of. It really got a lot of popularity after HBO, but then even on top of that, a lot of people were like, oh my god, you gotta read these.
Yeah, I read them before I knew Game of Thrones
was. Yeah, you're more of that, like, you know, you like to just.
And I'd have them recommend to me, like, 3 or 4 years before I ever read them.
Yeah. It's sort of broken through that niche of, like, people that like fantasy books. Mm-hmm. I mean, because there is that, like, you know, and you and, and Matt's old girlfriend, Nicole.
And I've read a lot of fantasy books, and. These are some of the good ones. Because there's enough just character drama.
Right, yeah.
It's a character-driven piece. It's not a fantasy-driven piece.
That seems to be what it's all about. So, I don't know. I mean, like, you satisfied with the first season as an adaptation and just it worked... It wasn't one of those cases where maybe they tried too closely to adapt it and...
No, it was very good. There's a terrific adaption, and their perception of the world was very on.
Right. They listened to the creator, and they really involved him, it seems, in terms of making it work.
I think the most apt rendering of the world is the opening scene. The opening sequence where all the titles are...
Right, the title sequence.
And all the...
The animation.
Yes. I think that is the most... apropos animation.
Right. Talking about the gears of the machinations.
Yes.
Of the kingdoms and things.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing I would say, and they get into it a little more, is there's this whole idea that there's 7 kingdoms. Now, from what I can think of, you've got the Starks, the Lannisters, and the Baltruthians, or whatever, and then you've got the people that are exiled.
Mm-hmm.
Is that 4 of the 7, or are there actually 4 more? And I remember there was something...
All right, there are 7 kingdoms, and the only ones that come into play in the first season are the Kingdom of the North.
Yeah.
The River Kingdom.
The one that, like, in order to cross for an army at one point, like, the guy had to agree to marry some guy's ugly daughter, I remember.
Yeah.
That.
And then the sort of middle kingdom where the capital is, the King's Landing.
Was that its own kingdom, the one with the cool prisons?
That's the Eyrie as well, yeah.
Gets Pit put up?
That one never comes into play, even by book 5. That's a really powerful kingdom.
Right.
And they have a whole lot of stuff going on, but they never do anything with it.
Do anything with, like, that, because that was super creepy, like, in the show, like, the whole thing with the mom and, like,
the mom
being kid.
All that stuff.
I almost, like, couldn't figure out how they got away with showing that, like, on TV, like, at all.
Yeah, so second-year-old.
I know it's HBO and everything, but that's like a... That's like a 10-year-old, like, sucking on some lady's breast. Like, I don't know how you get to do that. It's got to be, like, statutory something. No,
it's disturbing. But it's disturbing in the books as well.
Well, yeah, right, but then that never comes... I mean, that is...
We haven't met Peter Baelish yet in episode 1. He comes in later.
Is he the guy that's...
Littlefinger.
Tyrion's helper guy? The guy that just...
He runs, like, all the brothels.
Hanging out with him. That guy who...
Peter
Baelish. The guy pulls a knife on Ned in one of the episodes.
Yes.
At the end. He's like, I told you not to trust anybody. Not me. Yeah.
And he's the guy who's really pulling a lot of strings.
You can
books.
Definitely get that. Yeah, I think we'll get a kick out of it. I mean, I'll re-watching it now. It will be something I want to do. And then whenever season 2 comes out on DVD or whatever, I'll probably check it out.
Mm.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it'll keep... It will maintain the popularity for its costs and everything. If it does, like you say, sort of start to meander a little bit or be a little more... I mean, would you say...
Well, what they're going to do with the series is they'll just trim it down. They'll focus it. They'll certainly make reference to characters who had big storylines, but they're not going to follow these other big storylines.
You'd hope so. The question is how much, based on the popularity of the first season, how much are they going to try to milk out the show as a whole thing? I mean, I don't know, because it's such a high production value. If they're smart, they'll probably just be like, look, let's just make this work through and through. But they might honestly start running into an issue with, like, it's something that happens in, like, the Japanese, like, animations all the time when they're based on the manga, is that at a certain point in time, the animation has because of the way its production works versus the manga, it's like, well, I'm not done drawing this or coming up with the story mm-hmm. in the manga. And they're like, okay, well, we have to just make this show, so they're going to have to veer off. And it seems like that might be the case if Martin doesn't get with it. Unless they're going to try to really do
well,
six
that
seasons.
Would be...
That's quite a few years.
Four years down the line. Right.
But at the same time, in terms of pre-production and writing, it's kind of like I said, that backstory. They're going to kind of need to know on some level, especially if they're going to have to start trimming things. Because like you said, if some major plot point, you probably couldn't tell now like what they could or couldn't trim from book 4 or 3.
No. And honestly, I can't recall what they took out of book 1. Because
right,
it's been
gonna ask.
A year or two since I've read it. Yeah. And it stays so... has such loyalty to the book, to the main storylines,
right.
that the smaller stuff we lose because I don't remember it. Because it wasn't that important.
Right. And that's the best kind of adaptation is when it takes what's worth keeping and then can find a way to cleverly combine or mix. I mean, I don't know. I'd like to be optimistic because I think it's an exciting show to watch when it's firing on all the cylinders, though it does feel like a kind of show that not so much those episodes you can necessarily miss, but there's like you'd rather watch 2 in a row because not enough mm-hmm. happened in 1. Even yeah. though like it might feel long, it's like,
well, what's nice about the books is that it does take its time more and you can really get a better sense of what these characters are and what their histories are.
Yeah.
And all more side characters like the Lord Commander of the Night Watch. He's a really cool guy.
Yeah.
But we see very little of him.
Yeah, it's true. Right?
And a lot of his lines were given to Tyrion in the series.
Oh, that's interesting. That's a weird twist.
Well, the advice that Tyrion gives Jon Snow about these boys never held a sword before, they're all farmers, and when Tyrion goes, well, that was stuff that Lord Mormont was telling Jon Snow.
Yeah, there's probably just a con... They probably sort of had to do that and make a decision.
Because Tyrion's a more important character than
give him we need more good lines for him or something.
And it makes it more interesting with these two rival houses having a connection on that level.
Yeah, and it is a clever thing because even within those... like the way he's treated by his brothers and his brother and his sister and then like even his father.
We're talking about Tyrion or Jon Snow?
Tyrion.
Tyrion, okay.
Is, it's kind of like you like him and like the father you kind of get when they introduce the father, and that's such a great way to introduce him in the show the way they did.
Was that when he was cutting up the deer?
He's cutting it up and like he's like actually physically doing something like very like dirty labor, but he's like a big.
He's not afraid to get his hands dirty.
He's a fucking big shot. Well, it's not even that though, but it's like it has a real value too. You know, like he's doing something to like make food or something.
Yeah,
it's sort of like kind of like a Godfather thing where it's like he's cooking or something. You know, like it's some weird thing you give the character that's supposed to be a big shot.
Tywin, that's his name. Tywin Lannister, the head of House Lannister,
petting a cat or something.
He's a very interesting character.
Yeah, he seemed like. Like an old school kind of like, okay, I can get behind him. All the subterfuge that's going on with the incestuous sister-brother combo, you know, I could kind
of... Miss all of those kids are disappointed to him.
Yeah, they're kind of screwball, and you can sort of see that they need to go at some point. But, I don't know. I don't know what it will arrive at. I don't know what the ultimate sort of theme or point of the show necessarily is. Like, if it's going to take a real angle against the idea of like kingdoms and divine rights and all that kind of stuff, or what? I mean, because it sort of does that with like the Snow character, where he's kind of like shunned on some level, but also not really. But I'd say that it seems like it certainly makes a point of sort of following the outcasts of in terms, or the people that are going against their place. Like, they end up being the likable characters, to me, are the interesting ones. Like, the little daughter who's kind of the tomboy established that. And then later on, like, you can see pretty clearly, like, she becomes... whatever's going to happen with her is going to be pretty interesting, I think.
Yeah, they're taking their sweet time with it in the books, though, George did.
Right. Well, especially if it's supposed to be, like, a time thing, as opposed to jumping ahead 5 years.
See, that's the trouble. I mean, all the... Stark kids are kids.
Yeah.
And how much influence can they have unless they just jump ahead 5-6 years after they completed their training to become...
It does make them kind of compelling because, like, there's such danger to them. And if viewed that way, this other group starts to have power, it's like, what are they going to do? They're going to have to grow up pretty fast or something.
Yeah.
And even the... I thought that one of the least interesting characters, except until the end of the first season, was the proper Stark son who sort of led the army.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, even the pilot and stuff, you really don't get much from him. But
those
then,
characters aren't interesting. They're the typical... He's the good son.
Yeah.
He's the typical hero in most stories. There's nothing wrong. He's had the privileged life, and he does the right thing. He follows right and wrong, and has morals, and he does his duty, and that is all.
Right, and that
makes a good person, but it doesn't make an interesting character.
It doesn't until you put them in challenging situations. What they started to do, at least in my opinion, in the end of the first season, there was the scene where he's like dulling a sword, getting super pissed, thinking he's going to go back and like do a revenge thing. I don't know if that was because they just
Hacking
found
on
out.
A tree.
Yeah, this
that's when he found out that his dad
died.
Dad
his mom comes up to him and is like, "Look, you have to be this way now."
Yeah.
And like the fact that he's going to have to go through that struggle like started to make him compelling. And then I forget. I think it was his side where the strategy he had to employ, where he basically had to know that like 30,000 people were going to be completely sacrificed, set up like a false army. Like, that to me was like. That's like real hardcore, hardcore strategic, like general stuff where it's like, I sent these men to their death. And so I can see that character evolving into being someone like who, you're right, he might not have the quips and he might not be as hip as some of the other ones.
Well, yeah, he's Ned Stark's son, and Ned Stark is the same way as his son.
Right, yeah.
And he's just thrown into that situation.
You put him in a rough situation, you put the good guy trying to do right, trying to balance everything, and like that's what made the parts in the middle, I think, the sort of Soprano-y parts was the Ned Stark character, made those interesting because, you know, I love the fact that like the whole show is based around this politics, these people gearing to try to get this, you know, literally the game of the throne.
Yes,
right?
That's what it's
trying to
about.
Get the throne, right?
Yeah.
And there's a shot, like, or a scene in the first season where it's just Ned sitting there bored on it because he's like filling in for the king.
Yeah, because he's actually running the
king. He's running the king, but that requires that he sits on the throne and be like,
And the throne with the spiked monstrosity.
Yeah, right. It's this terrible like fused sword thing. But I love the imagery of the like fact that he's basically running the show. He doesn't want to be doing that. And he doesn't care.
And that's why he's good at it.
And that's also...
That's why he should be doing it.
But, there's a resonance there. Like, this whole idea of, like, he did all this, like, stuff in the past. And, I mean, if anything else, I think it adds a lot of depth to the characters, but it requires a lot of exposition. Because there is a huge amount of backstory.
Yes, I'm wondering, because there's even more backstory that needs to be filled so that the rest of the story makes sense. I'm wondering how they're going to be bringing that in the future seasons.
Yeah, it just ends up being like, well, they've got kind of a cool environment in the background where the two characters stroll along and exposition.
Because later on in the series, characters who we had no experience with but who were mentioned briefly in the backstory from the war that happened 17 years ago, they pop up again.
Yeah, and that's compelling, is that whole like overthrowing of Mad King and all that stuff.
The whole Mad King Ares, that is sort of explained over the course of the entire series.
And that will be good, because to sort of see what that amounts to.
I'd love to see some flashbacks of Ned's brother and Ned's father who were killed by the Mad King.
Yeah, no, that stuff... It is sort of like that's their attempt to sort of show anyone can die, realism things. It's like they sort of set this up where it's like, you know, they give characters like a desire for maybe a revenge or a retribution kind of thing, and then they don't necessarily get that. So there's that dissatisfaction.
Well, in the books, they're able to cover that really well by just sort of sifting back through the memories of the characters and their thoughts.
Yeah.
And they can take us back to those instances that, I mean, we can do the same thing with the series, but it would have to be through the method of flashbacks.
Yeah, right.
Which wasn't ever used in the first season. It's a device that I don't know if they're going to be going into.
Yeah, the only way, I mean, that's a tricky one. You would probably do it in the context of one character, and you'd make it a very like an episode heavy kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, look, we have to cover a lot of old ground, so we're going to bring Ned back for this episode and have him be in all these flashbacks that the wife is going to have while she's going somewhere. It has to have that parallelism thing where it's like she's going to confront so-and-so, yeah. Flashback to when so-and-so had to do the similar thing or whatever.
But they did cover stuff that happened in the past just through conversations, yeah. Like between Jaime Lannister and Ned Stark. They had that conversation, but the conversation, I mean, yeah, it was great, but that's not something that audiences can get and digest,
right.
Just by people talking about it. Like, you know, I felt really bad, Jaime was saying, when the Mad King burned your father and killed your brother, and so I killed him.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
That doesn't sink in unless you have the visual images of it.
It's telling, and that's the problem. Yeah. It's not the showing, and it almost seems like now the prequels are all the rage. I can easily see Martin going back for a cash grab and doing the prequel books to get you know two or three to get you to where
that'd be interesting. I think it'd be really cheap, but
it would be cheap, yeah, because you kind of already end up knowing it from a book standpoint.
Yes.
But maybe from a show standpoint, I don't know if they were going to do it that way. But that seemed to me like that could be a failing or a difficulty. It's something they're going to have to deal with. And they're probably just inevitably... I mean, it sounds like the same thing happened with the Harry Potter story, where they just invariably had to, like, have... They ran into certain issues with the way the books were structured versus the way that the story needed to be work for the movie. And it's like, well, like, the fourth book or something was, like, half just them in a tent camping.
No, it's book six or seven.
Yeah.
Book seven.
And so it's like, well, that's not an exciting thing to make a movie out of.
Yeah, in book six in Harry Potter, there's a big, epic battle. And then in book seven, there's another big epic battle. So they just cut out the big epic battle in book six for the movies.
Right, because it's just all happen at once kind of thing or something, yeah.
Which makes sense.
Anyway, so I'll definitely check out season two and appreciate you sitting here telling me about, you know,
yeah.
To anticipate. And, I mean...
I've done my best not to give...
not to give too many...
Who's going
to
be dying next.
Right. And, I mean, and it's a weird thing because I had forgotten this, that it isn't a complete story yet. So
it's not finished yet either, even the books.
Yeah, exactly. And so I guess we all have to wait and see. It's a strange thing to do, an adaptation on this scale for a storyline that they just don't know. I mean, I would imagine that somebody sat down with the guy and was like, look, where do you think this is going to go? Because it is a very novelistic approach to a story where it's like...
I don't think they need to. They have enough material out of the first... five books to not need to worry about where it's going in the end.
Possibly.
Well, we already know where it's going in. We have Daenerys, who's the rightful king, and now she has dragons at the end of this season, so she now has a lot of power. She just needs to figure out a way to get back to Westeros, the Seven Kingdoms. And then we have the Wall of the North, and we have bad stuff that's happening there that's going to eventually bring its way down south.
Right.
And we have all the infighting happening in the Seven Kingdoms.
Yeah.
So we know that all that's just going to converge into one final...
presumably, yeah, we know that shit. So that's probably what they discussed with him. He's like, well, this is all going to have to do this. So, you know, there it is.